Last weekend, many of us spent hours watching people perform at the very top of their field, at the top of their potential during the Super Bowl. Sure, it was the players who did that, but it was also the coaches and the managerial staff, the trainers. And think about the creative minds that go into those advertisements. Those folks were operating at the top of their potential as well. Super Bowl Sunday, regardless of whether your team wins or loses, is a day that we can see Americans really meeting their potential. And it's that same phenomena is one of the reasons I love going to see opera live. I love the technical skill of the lighting and the costumes and the sets, as well as the musicians, the singers, all coming together at that one moment when everyone is operating at their highest potential. It's thrilling. And it's not just these sort of big deal events. I mean, don't we all know somebody, a teacher or a colleague, who consistently, year in and year out, works at the top of their game, at the best of their potential? And of course, there are times when people or institutions don't meet their potential. Many personal crises are at the intersection when there's a gap between our potential and our actual performance. There's a young person in my life right now who's just started college, and she is struggling academically. And you know, the concern for her isn't so much that she's not up to the work or that her parents are wasting money. The real concern with her is that she's just not meeting her potential. And I think, you know, even things like midlife crises, and this is not that I'm going through one of these right now, but a midlife crisis can come when our perception of who we might be is not quite met with what we're doing day to day, right? There's this gap between potential and sort of reality. I think one thing for Christians when you think about potential is when people say things like, the church is full of hypocrites. When we say that, I think they're essentially saying Christians have so much potential in this world, but they're not meeting it. Most famously put, Mahatma Gandhi once said, I love your Christ, it's just that so many of you Christians are so unlike Christ. This is a big new area in psychology today. How is it that some people and some organizations meet their potential consistently? What are the characteristics of those individuals that can consistently perform at a high level? What's the difference between the Patriots and other teams? How is it that Alex Honnold can free climb El Capitan? What's the difference between Yo-Yo Ma and other skilled cellists? And one of the things that researchers have found is consistent about the people and organizations that function at or near their potential is clarity of mission, philosophy, or core values. However you want to phrase it, it's being able to articulate who you are in the world. What are the evaluation criteria that you will be judged by? I believe that inherent in our effort at Oakton to articulate a set of values is an underlying premise that we're not fulfilling our potential as a congregation and maybe even as Christians, that we can be doing more in our community in supporting one another and being a beacon of hope, of showing people another way of living in the suburbs. Are there those among us who believe that we are punching above our weight in Northern Virginia? That the impact that we're having as a group and individually is disproportionate to our size? Is there some unrealized potential in this congregation? I picked this passage from Timothy today with some reluctance because it's one of those passages that some Christians can use in a divisive way, and I'm going to try to avoid that. But it seems to me that there's a lot that we can take from it as we think about core values. Paul's letters to Timothy and to Titus are not really where Paul lays out like core Christian doctrine, right? That's Romans and Corinthians. But they're much more sort of a practical document to Timothy about what to go and do. And I think of that as being true of our core values. They're not a statement of faith. They're not doctrine. But they are, they're a guide for us in how to go out and do what it is that we're going to go try to do. One of the themes of our core values is the desire to share more broadly how Christ works in our lives. When the value is, we are courageous in sharing Christ's love with new people in new ways and in new places. What an aspiration. I think that that's something that we're not yet great at doing. At least I'm not. In the right circumstance, I'm good at it, but those circumstances don't come very often. In the text that Missy read, and I love that you used a different translation because I'm going to sort of move through translations today. In the text that Missy read, she said, be prepared if the time is favorable or unfavorable. Another translation that I've read said, be prepared when it's convenient and when it's inconvenient. But I think my favorite translation is spread the word insistently at the right time and at the wrong time. The right time is easy. The wrong time, well, that takes a little bit more courage. And it seems that there are more wrong times than right times. I'd like to tell you a story about when was the wrong time. It was about 6 years ago, almost coming up on 6 years. And my husband's best friend, he was the best man at our wedding, dear friend of ours, had a catastrophic heart attack. And he was unconscious in the hospital, and the medical staff was, they were doing their best to keep him alive long enough to determine whether or not he was going to have any meaningful recovery from this, from the heart attack. And the cardiologist, who coincidentally was a friend of ours, called us and he said, you know that Jim is gravely, gravely ill. It was, he didn't think he was going to survive this. So Mark and I drove over to Holy Cross Hospital to see Jim, and I had brought some oil with me to anoint him. And so we got to Holy Cross, and you know, the ICU is a constant motion, and his wife was in the waiting room just getting a little bit of a break, and so it was me and Mark and the ICU nurse in the room together. And I said, I'm gonna anoint Jim. And then we thought the better of it. You know, after all, we were in a hospital, and, you know, it was this very clean environment, and people were doing their work all around him, and, you know, we really hadn't gotten permission from his wife to do this, and, you know, what if we got in trouble? What if we got yelled at? What if we did something wrong or inappropriate? And Mark and I decided we weren't going to anoint him. And that is something to this day that I regret. It was the wrong time. And yet, we're told it's the right time. When are the wrong times to profess the love of Christ? When are the wrong times in word and deed to treat your neighbor as you would yourself, to testify to the work of the Holy Spirit in your life? What makes those times wrong? Is it fear of social opprobrium? Do we think that we're wasting our time, that the message will fall on dry ground? We are courageous in sharing Christ's love with new people in new ways and in new places. Spread the word insistently at the right time and at the wrong time. Paul writes to Timothy, "For the time will come when all people will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear. They will turn their ears away from the truth and turn aside to myths." You know, Paul isn't typically considered to be in the pantheon of prophets, but this certainly sounds prophetic. Or maybe he was just an astute observer of human nature. Other translations don't use the word doctrine, which can be so loaded, particularly in our time. One translation of this passage says, they will find healthy teaching intolerable, and provide themselves with a host of teachers more to their liking who will massage their ears. They will turn away from hearing the truth and turn towards mythology. One of our core values is we use Jesus' ministry as our model to engage an ever-changing culture with a never-changing gospel, experiencing Christ in the congregation and in the community. In our ever-changing world, what are some of the myths that we believe? The myth of redemptive violence, that an act of violence can make a wrong right. It's the premise of so many of our superhero movies. The myth that money is an accurate gauge of how hard someone works, how smart they are, how secure they are in the world, their value in society. That justice is done by incarcerating more and more people. A myth that is that everything that is true can be measured and managed. How do we compare these myths against the Sermon on the Mount? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice. Blessed are the meek. How do we carry the truth of Jesus' ministry into our community? How do we hold one another accountable to it within our congregation? The third thing that strikes me about this reading from Timothy is that it starts and finishes with the notion of judgment. The passage starts with, "In the presence of God and of Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead, and in view of his appearing to his kingdom, I give you this charge." And it finishes with, "Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, with the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing." Now, what I am not about to say is not about, you know, faith versus works. I'm not talking about, you know, a works-based salvation. But I am saying that in order for us to grow into our potential as Christians, it's critical that we individually and as a body have a set of standards, a model, and a philosophy to guide what we do and how we live. You know, I think about things like, you know, if you're doing Legos and you've got big Starship Enterprise Lego, right? You build the whole thing and then you look on the box and say, does it meet the model, right? Or when you're cooking, this looks like a cup. Is it a cup? Let me measure it. It's a model. It's a standard. It's how you know what you're doing meets that standard. Is the way that I just treated my family, my neighbor, my coworker, my friend, a stranger, the way that Christ would have? Did I spend my money in alignment with my values? Does the way I spend my time conform with those values? Ultimately, our core values should be a measure by which we judge our activities as a congregation. How we spend our resource, how we spend our time, how we preach the word, how we teach, encourage, and admonish each other about our faith. The promise of the accountability of judgment is perhaps our most valuable tool in living into the potential as a church. A church in which we are willing to be known as peacemakers, for our simple living, and for working together in support of God's creation and work in the world. Amen.